Well, on your Tes Amud Aleph, fourth line. We learned yesterday about a machloikas Abaya and Rava, about a now like this. In the Mishnah, we said that a chotzer that's surrounded by an achsadra, then you may not have a kosher sukkah over there. And the scenario we said was you have the walls of the houses surround the chotzer on three sides, which is how a chotzer usually was built in those days. Then you have out of the walls of the houses on the three sides, there stick out ledges on the three sides of the chotzer. So they form sort of an entryway. They form sort of like an entryway. That's the word achsadra, essentially. Good morning, Ellie. The word achsadra essentially means an entryway. So they formed a structure like that around three sides of the chotzer. Now what happens is now you're placing schach on top of those edges, going from one edge to the other. So we said if the ledges that are sticking out from the houses are less than 4 amos wide, then fine. We say doifen akuma rather. So we say therefore that on each of the three sides, the walls of the houses serve as the walls of the sukkah, and therefore we're good. We said if they're 4 amos wider, if they're 4 amos or wider, then no good because then you can't say doifen akuma anymore. So now that was the Mishnah. Now we had Abaya and Rava argued within that. We said, what happens if the achsadra has patsimin? So according to Rashi, or rather we said if there's patsimin, then everybody agrees it's fine. The question is if not. So we said according to Rashi, patsimin means that you have all around those three sides of the chotzer, where you have those ledges sticking out, on each side you also have pillars coming down from the edges of those ledges, or from somewhere along the length of those ledges, somewhere along the width of those ledges, and coming down to the ground, and they're within three tefachim of one another. So it's sort of like, you have a similar kind of construction in some places where you have, you'll have downstairs apartments and then upstairs apartments or something like that, and you'll have sort of like you'll have a ledge which actually forms the floor of the second floor gallery above the first one, and you'll have it'll be sticking out over the in front of the apartment, in front of the apartments, and then you'll have pillars here and there holding it up. So suppose you have those pillars within three tefachim of each other. We said everybody agrees that that's fine. Now, what if there's no such pillars? Then Rava had said, there's no walls then, as we said in the Mishnah. But and we're going to ask now from the Mishnah how Abaya would understand it. But Abaya says it would actually work on the grounds of pi tikra yored v'soisim. We can say that the edges of the ledges, which are flat, which are smooth. Rashi points out in the sugya over here that necessarily these ledges have to be horizontal. If they were pitched like a pitched roof, then for sure we wouldn't say pi tikra yored v'soisim. But if they're flat, as is usually the case, then we can say that the edges of them can be considered to come down and form a virtual wall. So now you have three virtual walls around the sukkah, and therefore we'd be good. Again, maybe let's show a picture of it to illustrate what we're talking about over here, for those who can see. Then you have over there, those arrows represent where we say where according to Abaya, we're saying pi tikra yored v'soisim. So according to Rava, no good because the walls of the houses are further back. They're more than 4 amos from the house, from the sukkah. But according to Abaya, we find on the ground the pi tikra yored v'soisim. Okay, so we tried to relate that to a machlokas of Rav and Shmuel on that subject of pi tikra yored v'soisim, but we said it doesn't necessarily relate because over there they're talking about a roof which is over a space where you're talking about whether you can carry in that space on Shabbos. So we can talk about, listen, the edges of that roof were actually made to be able to cover that area underneath it. Over here, just the opposite. These ledges are not made to cover the chutz, so they're only meant to cover the area next to the walls, which when you're building your sukkah, that area is outside your sukkah. So then not so 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 Rava says not necessarily would we say p2, so we wouldn't say p2 yod resosim over there. Okay, so that's where we're holding then, fourth line of your testament Aleph. So the Gemara said Tanan, let's look at our Mishnah and see who it fits with. The Mishnah had said b'chein chotzer amokefas achsadra, that if a chotzer is surrounded by an achsadra, like we just said, surrounded by these ledges on three sides, then if the ledges are 4 amos wide or wider, then the sukkah is possible. V'amai, now according to Abaya, what's the problem? Name a pitikri yerid v'soisim. Why don't we say pitikri yerid v'soisim, and therefore we're good? The answer is Tirgama Rava alibada Abaya. So Rava answered it according to what Abaya would say. In other words, Rava is saying, myself, you're right. I would say the sukkah is possible there. There's nothing to talk about. But Abaya, after all, I mean, the Amoraim have to know all the Mishnayos. Necessarily, Abaya knew this Mishnah. He would evidently have to explain Shehishva es Kiruyoi. He would have to understand where you place the sach flush with the edges of the ledges. Meaning like this, when do we say pitikri yerid v'soisim? Only if from the area where you need the yerid v'soisim, where you need the wall, you're actually able to see the edge of that roof or the edge of that ledge. Then we can say that we can consider the vertical edge of that ledge can be considered lahalacha to come down and to form a virtual wall over there. But suppose you placed your schach in such a way that the edges of it are flush with the edges of the ledges. So in other words, when you're standing in the middle of the chotzer, you don't actually see the edges of the ledges, or at least you don't see them so clearly because they're covered with schach from your vantage point. Then we wouldn't say pitikri yerid v'soisim. So Abaya would have to understand that the Mishnah is talking about that kind of case. Okay. So the Gemara says, Besura, now just like we had the other day, we had a sugya where we had one version of it that they learned in the yeshiva of Surah, and then a different version that they learned in the yeshiva of Nahavdah. In those days, Surah and Nahavdah, and afterwards Surah and Pumbedisa, before we had Surah and Nahavdah, which were the two big yeshivas in Bavel at the beginning, as Surah was Rav's yeshiva, Nahavdah was Shmuel's yeshiva. Later on, Rav Shura Goyen tells us in his Igeres that Nahavdah was destroyed by an invading army. So therefore, they moved that yeshiva to Pumbedisa. And from then on, you have Surah and Pumbedisa are the two big yeshivas in Bavel. So here also, you have the same kind of thing where there were different versions of the Machloikas in different places. So Basura Masni Lahoshmaita Bahailishna. In Surah they learned the discussion between Rava and Abaya, like we just said, that again, where there are Pitsimin, where instead of in that picture before when we showed with the arrows, when there were actual pillars coming down over there from the edges of the ledges, and they're within 3 tefachim of each other, then we said everybody agrees it's kosher, and the machlokas was only when there aren't, and we just have to rely on pitikra. By the way, all of this we said was according to Rashi. Tosfos has a much different understanding of this matter of yeshla or ein la patsimin. Tosfos had understood that we're talking about a sukkah that has two complete walls, and we're asking whether we're able to use pitikra for the third side to have a wall on the third side or whether or not. In any case, so the first version, Surah's version then, was that when there are Pitsimin within 3 Tfachim, sure, there's no problem because of Lavud. The Machloikas is when there are no Pitsimin, or they're not within 3 Tfachim of each other, can we say Pitikri Yerid V'soisim, as Abaya says, or can we not, as Rava says? And the reason we wouldn't say it is because, again, here, the edges of the ledges are not the walls that we want to form. The ledges themselves are over an area outside of the sukkah. We can only say pitikri yerid v'soisim when we're talking about a roof or ledge or something that's made for what's underneath it, which is not the case over here. Okay. But Pumbedisa Masni, in Pumbedisa, they learned the discussion differently. They learned sikach agave achsadra she'en la patsimin. If he put schach on top of an achsadra which has no patsimin, which has none of those vertical pillars coming down, divrehak or psula, then everybody is going to agree that's possible. And now when we learn our Mishnah and we say b'chein chotzer shein b'kavas achsadra, now we don't need, according to this version, Rava's explanation that we're talking about that he put the schach flush with the edges of the ledges, because you don't need that. For sure over here, we're not going to say pitikri yerid v'soisim, even according to Abaya. The machloikas would be yesh la patsimin. What if it has these patsimin within 3 tefachim one of another? So, Abaya Amak Sheira, but Rava Amak Psula. That would be, according to the version that they learned in Pumbedisa, the Machloikas, where Abaya would say that it's kosher and Rava would say that it's not. Abaya Amak Sheira, Amrinin Lavud, because we're going to say Lavud, and therefore So you have the pillars within three tefachim one of another. Therefore, we're good. But Rava Amar Psula, whereas Rava is going to say Pasul, Lo Yamrin and Lavud, because he's going to say you don't say Lavud. Now, obviously, we don't mean that Rava is going to say that never, we don't ever say Lavud. Of course not. Lavud is Allah HaMosh Mesinai. Rava is not going to argue with that. What we mean is, in this kind of case, when we were talking about before, when we were talking about Lavud in connection with walls of a sukkah, we were always talking about where the walls are functioning as the actual walls of the sukkah. So you have wall, for example, you said over there, we said that let's say you have a wall where you don't have enough material for a third complete wall. So you put a piece of wood with put a piece of wood within three tefachim of one of the other walls, and Lavud allows us to consider it to be joined together. Here, after all, we're talking about where the pillars are not considered, or the pillars are not really there to serve as walls of the sukkah. They're really there in order to serve the area under the achsadra, under the ledges. So therefore, Rava says, we can't say over here, lavud. In effect, Rava says, what you would have to have is, in order to say lavud, you're having to say that these pillars are serving as walls for both sides, that they're serving as walls for the area underneath the ledges, as well as for the sukkah. And Rava says, you can't say lavud where you're going to do that. Tosfos has the explanation, and the Ritva also points out that here our part of the Gemara seems to fit better with Tosfos' explanation. If you're going to say that we're talking about, like Rashi said, pillars within three tefachim of one another, then what's the problem? Of course you're going to say lavud. Rather, what we're talking about over here is where you have two perpendicular walls of the sukkah. You have two walls already, two complete walls making an L shape, and then you're talking about over here that you have at the end of each one, you have one pillar. So now, with those pillars, can we say pitik or yerid v'soisim, or can we not? So lavud over here, the Ritva says, doesn't really mean lavud like we mean in the rest of Shas. That means within three tefachim of each other. It just means, can we consider as if we have a complete wall over here? Rav Abaya says yes, Rav says no. And the Gemara says, v'hilchsa kalishna kama, the halacha is like the first version. So that if there's pitzimin, then everybody agrees it's fine. And only when there's no pitzimin is there a machlokas. And since, of course, when we have a machlokas, Abaya and Rava, the halacha is usually like Rava, except in six cases, this isn't one of them. Therefore, the result is the halacha is like Rava in the first version. So if there's pillars, then we're fine. Within three tefachim of one another, then we're fine. And if not, then we're not fine because we don't say pitzik v'yerid v'sis. Further on this topic, the Gemara says, Rav Ashi Ashkechele Rav Kahana, Dukom Esakach Agabe Achsadra She'en Lepatzimin. Rav Ashi one time found Rav Kahana, who was one of his Rebbeim, who was putting sukkah on where there was an Achsadra that had no Patzimin. So the scenario is, you have the diagram in the Gemara over here, although it's a little hard to understand, but let's try to explain. So you have an achsadra sticking out of the house, and you have the area in the diagram where it says the word achsadra is covered with a ledge, like we said before. Now you have, outside of it, he's building a sukkah. He has two walls of his sukkah, and he's putting schach on that sukkah. Now the problem is, again, the achsadra is four amos wide, so we can't consider the wall of the house that's further back of the achsadra is going to be the third wall of the sukkah. So we seem to have a problem. We only have two walls. And since we don't say like a baya pitik or yerid v'sosim, then what are we doing? Amalei, sort of ashi astra kahana, lois sova lomar hod amar rava yesh lapatzimin kshera ein lapatzimin psula. Rebbe, don't you agree with what Rava said, that if there's patzimin coming down from the front of the roof of the achsadra, then we're good, and if not, then not. Here you don't have such pillars coming down from the front of the achsadra. All you have is the ledge of the covering of the achsadra itself. You have two walls of your sukkah, but where's the third wall? So Rav Kahana showed Rav Ashi, this is a different case, because you have something over here which is visible from the inside, but not from the outside. Namely, so you have, the diagram over here in the Gemara shows the opposite. Inami nirim machutz v'shava v'fnim. The diagram here shows the second possibility, that you can see a third wall visible from the outside, but not from the inside. Namely, if you look over here in the diagram, you can see you have two complete walls of the sukkah. Then you have a piece sticking out from the second side of the sukkah going toward the edge of the achsadra. So when you're standing inside the sukkah, you don't see that third side. But when you stand outside of the sukkah, you can see that there is the beginning of a third wall over there. And therefore it would be good. So in fact, in other words, so you don't need necessarily a third wall visible from inside the sukkah. It's good enough if you have it, like in that diagram, visible from the outside. You could have the other way around also, where it was visible from the inside, but then when you're standing outside the sukkah, all you see is two complete walls. But then you have a little piece sticking out from one of the corners, from one of the two perpendicular walls, going next to the achsadra. So now, of course, the problem is, I mean, didn't we learn, now Tosfos asked the problem, and it's how on earth does that work? I mean, we learned earlier in the Perek, you need a tefach within three tefachim of the other one, you use lavud, and you use tzuras ha-pesach, and so forth. We said maybe for Shabbos, that would work for a third wall, but with Pashtus, we're talking about over here, a sukkah that's being used for the entire week. So Tosfos leaves the question unanswered, but there are other Rishonim who explain that what we're talking about over here is that given that, and now Rabbah had agreed that on a Daraisa level, Pitikra Yerud Vesosa might work. So that's what we're talking about over here. The third wall is next to the Achsadra. Fine, we can't say Dofen Akuma. We can't say that the wall of the house is considered the third wall of the Sukkah because it's too far away. But Midaraisa, we would be able to say Pitikra Yerud Vesosim, as we have examples in Masechta Eruvin where we do that. It's only the Rabbanan that we said it's no good. So therefore, once we have that third tefach on the, once we have that one tefach on the third side in front of the achsadra, even if it's only in a way that you can't see it from within the sukkah, or even if it's in a way that you can see it that you can see it only from within the sukkah but not from outside of it, then that together with Pitikra might be good enough. It might also be talking about over here where he made a tzuras ha-pesach. So the Rosh gives the answer that Pitikra Yerud Vesosim would work on a Daraisa level. It's a different answer from Tosfos Rabbein Peretz that says that what we're talking about is that he made a Tzuras HaPesach on that third side, and so fine. So he has a Tefach and he has a Tzuras HaPesach, and there's his third wall. Okay. And we see that Nirub Machutz, we see that these kinds of things, where something that's sticking out is visible from only one side, is kosher, to Itzma, as we have a related discussion when it comes to a Mavui, and we've learned here and there throughout the Perek, we've touched on the concept of a Mavui, where you have a side street, an alleyway, where different chatseris open into, and you go in and out through that Mavui to go to the street. So Midrabanan, this is also for those who are learning three parakim of Rambam, this was yesterday's Shlosha Parakim, is that you on the fourth, if you have the Mavri is a dead end, so it's closed in on three sides, then on the fourth side you need a lechi, a vertical pole standing by the edge of the Mavri, or a koda, a horizontal beam going across it. So now, in connection with a lechi, so the Gemara describes over there in Eruvin, Nidam Machutz V'Shavam V'Fnim, what if you have a lechi which is only visible from the outside of the mavui, but from the inside it still looks like a continuation of the wall? Nidin b'shem lechi, it counts as a lechi. Rashi actually gives two possibilities what it means. One is the diagram that you have in Rashi, where you have the wall of the mavui. The diagram, as I have it in front of me, isn't really accurate actually, because it shows the leg that becomes thinner, not flush with it. It shows the thin end flush with the thick end. It should really be that sticking out. It should really be that you have two thick walls going the full length of the mavui. Then at the end of it, you have the wall becomes thinner. So from the point of view, when you're standing inside the mavui, that looks like a continuation of the wall of the mavui. But when you're standing outside, you can see that it's not. You can see that it's actually a separate piece. That's one possibility. The other possibility, which Rashi doesn't diagram over here, but he explains, is you can have where the lechi at the end, you can have where the piece at the end of the mavui turns 90 degrees outward, so it looks like the leg of a tuft. So again, from the inside of the mavui, you can't see it, but when you're standing outside the mavui, you can see it. So we say in Erev, in Nidin Mishum Lechi, so the thing counts as a Lechi. The Lechi, Hainan Patsimin. A Lechi is effectively the same thing as Patsimin. In other words, it works the same way for the wall of a sukkah. So therefore, the Kahana is fine with his sukkah that has two walls and then in effect a Lechi on the third side. Again, according to Tosfos Yomein Peretz, we would have to say Yeratzos and Pesach as well. And according to Tosfos Arosh, we would have to say that he's also relying on Pitzik or Yerud Vesosin. Again, you know, I mean, with all of this set that we're saying about when you have it's kosher with incomplete walls and different things like that, and Shulchan Aruch mentions that you shouldn't really rely on those kinds of things, because to know when it's a correct wall and when it's not, and to know all those kinds of details can get very complicated, and you can end up with a puzzle sukkah without realizing it. So better to just make at least three complete walls, or better or minigas to make four complete walls and have done with it rather than relying on a table. Further, the Gemara continues, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, a new discussion. Psol hayotzim in a sukkah nidon kesukkah. If you have schach, and we've used the word psol several times in our perek to mean schach, because it's related to psolus gordon v'yekev. So if that's sticking out of the sukkah, nidon kesukkah, it's considered like the sukkah. Now, what does that mean? My psol hayotzim in a sukkah. Oma ula. It means kanim hayotzim la'achorei hasukkah. It means when you have sticks of your schach that are sticking out behind the sukkah. Now keep in mind, we've said several times in the perek that the usual way they built sukkahs in those days was they usually built them with only three walls. The fourth side was completely open. So therefore, you have two side walls. You have the back wall. So now you have sticking out behind the back wall, there are pieces of schach, the sticks of your schach, sticking out toward the back. So then we're saying that such a thing is considered a kosher sukkah. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? What do you mean? In order for it to be a kosher sukkah, you need three walls. You don't have, because on that side, you only have one wall. The answer is the Gemara says b'di'ika. Okay, so we're talking about, let's say you have three walls. So let's say, for example, that the two side walls of the sukkah are also sticking out in that direction. And of course, you have the third wall as well, because that is the back wall of the original sukkah. So in effect, what you have over here is two sukkahs that if you look from the top, you have kind of like an H shape. And therefore, we're saying that the back of it would also be a kosher sukkah. So the Gemara says, so what do you mean? In an hechsher sukkah, but you have to have, in order for it to be a sukkah, it has to be at least 7x7 tefachim. And again, the answer is b'di'ika. We're talking about that the walls stick out far back enough that you have a space of seven tefachim length over there by the width of the sukkah. Okay, the Gemara asks, well, we're in it, salasa merubah mechamasa. You also need to have more shade than sun over there for it to be a part of the sukkah. And again, the answer is b'di'ika. Let's say there's so much schach sticking out over that side that you also have over there. The Gemara says, if you have all those things, you have walls sticking out on that side. You have seven tefachim of walls sticking out on that side. Over them, you have seven tefachim of schach. And you have that schach. There's enough of it to be tzilosim. Rav Mechamasa, Maila Memra. Then what's the chiddush? Of course, you're allowed to have two sukkahs that share a common wall. What's the chiddush then that Ula is telling us? What's the chiddush then that Braisa is telling us, or that Ula is telling us? The answer is, you might have thought that after all, these walls and the schach that's sticking out were made for the inside of the sukkah. They're made for the main sukkah, not for any auxiliary sukkah that's sticking out of it. They were not designed to be for any outer sukkah. You would think that not. Maybe it doesn't count as a kosher sukkah. Kamash Malan, therefore the Braisa wants us to know, and Ula wants us to know in his explanation of the Braisa that in fact it is good. Now Tosfa says, what are you talking about? We don't need the Braisa to tell us that. We don't need Ula to tell us that. We said, again, in the case of a chotzer surrounded by an achsadra, we said that the walls of the houses serve as the walls of the sukkah if the achsadra is less than 4 amos wide. Even though the walls weren't built for the sukkah, the walls were built for the houses. Tosfos explains that, okay, the fact that we're not talking about the walls, but we're talking about the sukkah. The Gemara is focusing on the sukkah, on the schach, rather. The Gemara is focusing on the schach. You would have thought, look, the schach was placed on there for the inside sukkah. It wasn't placed for the sukkah that's backing up onto it. So, okay, now the fact is, of course, you don't have to put tzchach l'shem sukkah, but nevertheless, it has to at least be the shem sale. You might have thought that it's not good. And therefore, the braisa is telling us that it's fine. Okay, that's one explanation. Now we're going to have several other explanations of the braisa, of what the braisa just said, psol ha-yotzim in ha-sukkah, nidin ka-sukkah, but we need to understand what that means. So we have Ula's explanation that it means when you have schach sticking out behind the sukkah, together with walls. Rabba and Rabbi Yosef both give a different explanation. We're not talking about, like Ula says, sticks of schach that stick out behind the sukkah. We're talking about what they stick out towards the front of the sukkah. One wall of the sukkah extends out together with them. In other words, you have the sukkah as usual is shaped like a ches. You have, in this particular case, one wall, one leg of the ches is longer than the other, and you have some schach sticking out along that wall. So now you don't have seven tefachim over. That place doesn't have necessarily seven tefachim. That place doesn't have three walls. It only has one wall next to it, and it's sticking out of the rest of the sukkah. So, ma'u detema ho les b'hechsh sukkah. You might think it's not good enough, it's not large enough to be a sukkah by itself, because not 7x7 tefachim. It's not 7x7 tefachim, and it doesn't have three walls. Kamash Malan. Therefore, the braisa is telling us that no, because it's an extension of the original sukkah, and therefore it's fine. Rashi explains the same way as we learned before. For example, that you can have two complete walls of the sukkah, and then the third one is a tefach. So we said, therefore, that so what do you have when you're putting that third tefach? And we said you put that within three tefachim of one of the other corners in order to have lavud. You still have, the fact is, you only have four tefachim of wall on that side, and nevertheless, we still say it's kosher, even though on the other side it sticks out seven tefachim. So therefore, nevertheless, it's still all considered one sukkah. You have a different explanation that we're talking about over here. The basic sukkah is more than 7x7, and then you have a wall sticking out. The point is that we say that it is considered a valid sukkah, even though this particular part does not have 7x7 tefachim and does not have three walls. We had at the beginning of the perek also, we had the case over there involving Hilmi, Amalka's sukkah, where we said one possibility was that there was a large room in it, and then there were small side chambers, and those count as part of the sukkah as well, on the grounds of what we're saying over here, that kanim hayotzim in ha-sukkah. Okay. Another explanation of the braisa, Rabbi Baba Chana Amar Rabbi Yechanan, lo nitzrucha elal sukkah sheruba tzilosim rub mechamasa. The chiddush of the braisa is, let's say you have a sukkah where most of it has a lot of schach, most of it has more shade than sun, and then you have a small part of the sukkah where you have more shade than sun. Mao de tamer tiposel bahach pota. So you would think maybe that part should be considered a separate sukkah, and it should be possible to sit underneath it. Or some of the, or a different explanation is maybe the whole sukkah should be possible because of that. Kamash Malan. Therefore, the braisa is telling us that not. This is psol hayotzim in a sukkah. It's coming out, not sticking out from the sukkah like Ula and Rabba and Rabbi Yosef said, but rather we just mean yotze in the sense that it's not. It's excluded in a certain sense from the sukkah. It's not roofed with enough schach to be a kosher sukkah by itself, but because it's part of a larger sukkah which has enough schach, therefore it's fine. So it's similar to what we said the other day, that Tosfos had said that if you have a gap someplace in your schach, even if that gap is three tefachim, as long as it doesn't extend the whole width or the whole length of the sukkah, then you're fine because the fact is it's surrounded by other schach. So that's similar to what we're saying over here, therefore, that even if you have an area of your schach where you don't have enough schach, you have gaps over there, but nevertheless, it's still kosher because the whole rest of the sukkah is kosher. My yotze mehechsher sukkah. And that the word yotze means it goes out of the category of being all by itself, a kosher sukkah, but nevertheless, it's fine because it's still part of a larger sukkah. Rabbi Oshia says, here's another explanation in the braisa. Lo nitzrucha ela l'schach posel pachas mishlosha v'sukkah ktana. What we're talking about over here, the chiddush, when the braisa is saying schach when we're sola yotzim and asuka nidin pesuka, what we're actually talking about is we're talking about posel eschach, that we're talking about posel eschach less than three tefachim, and it's a small sukkah. So you have a sukkah, a small sukkah means that it's exactly 7 by 7 tefachim. Now, let's say you have the whole thing is not covered with kosher eschach, part of it you have posel eschach. So the Braisa is saying, nevertheless, the posel eschach is considered good enough to go toward the 7 tefachim. Umay yoytze. So what do we mean when we use the word yoytze? Means similar to what we said in Rabbi Baba Chana's explanation, it means yoytze mitoda sukkah. Means going out of the category of a sukkah. This is not material that is kosher for schach. But nevertheless, because most of the 7 tefachim has kosher schach on it, then therefore we're allowed to have a little posel schach combined together to make up the 7 tefachim. Tosfos has a problem with Rashi on that. In that case, why mention davka sukkah katana? After all, in a large sukkah as well, if there's an air gap, you can't sleep underneath it. And if there's more than a certain amount of posel eschach, as we learned a few days ago, you're also not allowed to sleep under it. So we need to be told about this by a large sukkah as well, not just by a small sukkah. They have a number of other questions on Rashi. So they have a girsa the other way around, that if there's air over here, you're allowed to sleep underneath it. But if there's posel eschach, you're not allowed to. Meaning, in other words, that Rav Oshia wants us to know that schach posel is, usually we said the other day that many times an air gap is worse than schach posel, in that you only need 3 tefachim of a gap to make it posel, whereas with posel eschach, we said 4 tefachim or 4 amos, depending on the different opinions of Rav and Shmuel, depending where in the sukkah it is. But over here, we have a case where schach posel is worse than air. Therefore, on the face of it, you shouldn't be able to sleep underneath it. Nevertheless, it still works to be machshir the sukkah. So the question then is, if you're telling me that posel eschach counts towards the 7 tefachim of the sukkah, maskif la Rav Hoshia asks on that, how is that possible? Lo yehei el aver. Posel eschach can't be any better than air. But aver pochas mishloish of tefachim besukkah tana mi posel. After all, or no, it can't yet. How should it be any different? What's the chiddush that posel eschach helps to make up the 7 tefachim, even if it was air? And we've said before that air is worse because 3 tefachim of air is enough to posel the sukkah. But nevertheless, even by a small sukkah, less than 3 tefachim of air gap is not a problem because lavud. So for sure, if there's posel eschach over there, it would count. So what's the chiddush? So Rav Abba says that's the difference. The difference is that schach posel, you're actually allowed to, not only it's mitzdanef, but you're allowed to sleep underneath it. Whereas when it comes to air, yes, it counts towards the 7 tefachim as long as it's less than 3 tefachim, but you wouldn't be able to sleep or eat under that area. Again, Tosfos has their girsa the other way around, that air you would be allowed to sleep underneath and schach posel you would not. So the Gemara asks, how is that possible? So you're telling me, in other words, that you're telling me that air according to Rashi's girsa, or posel eschach according to Tosfos's girsa, helps to make up the 7 tefachim of the sukkah, so that you have a kosher sukkah, but nevertheless, that part of the sukkah is posel, and you can't sleep or eat underneath it. How is that possible? If it's posel, that if air or posel eschach is posel, how does it combine towards the 7 tefachim? So that's the question. How could you have such a thing which is able to combine together to make a shear, but it itself is posel towards the shear? How do you have such a thing? So Rabbi Yitzchak ben Eliashib says, yes, I'll give you an example of that from a different area of halacha. Consider titanorik. Consider liquid mud. Now we have in the Mishnayos that we learn during the 11 months and for Yotzeit, and the Mishnayos Geshmal and as a mikvah. So we mentioned over there different kinds of liquids that do and don't count toward the 40 sava mikvah. So we have over there in the first Mishnah, Yeshmal as a mikvah v'loy poislin, one of the ones that malin v'loy poislin, that they help complete the 40 sava mikvah and do not parcel it, even if you have three lug of mayim shorim of them that fall into the mikvah, and one of them that works is titanoroi, with liquid mud. Elsewhere in Mishnayos Mikvahs, it explains that it's considered liquid mud is considered when a cow would be able to drink. In other words, there's some dirt and sediment and whatever suspended in it, but not so much that it's basically mud. It's still basically water, and it just has some mud and some dirt mixed into it. Actually, the Mishnah over there has a few other definitions. Rashi over here brings a different definition that you can. It's soft enough that you can pour it from one keli to another. Anyway, the point is that titanorik shemitstaref lahashlam aboim sa. So we're saying that helps count towards the 40 sava mikra and vatovel boiloi also loy tefillah. Yet if a person tovels in liquid mud by itself, then it wouldn't be valid tefillah. So there you have an example. So there you have an example of something that can be used towards the 40 saw of a mikvah, but it can't be. The actual 40 saw cannot consist only or the majority of that. Tosfos asks on Rashi that the comparison is not really the same. Over there, you have the mud contains a lot of water in it. Over here, the air is not really mixed together with the schach. So in fact, Tosfos says that actually what we mean is, even if you have, let's say, a majority of this liquid mud mixed together with regular liquid, with regular water, nevertheless, it wouldn't combine together. Tosfos says that really, no, what it is Tosfos says you can't really tovel when titanoric is helping to combine to toward the mikvah. What we mean so in other words, all it is that we're saying that the titanoric will help as the 40th saw, but not that you can actually, it will help as the 40th saw, and it won't parcel the mikvah, but not that you can actually tovel in the muddy part. You still have to tovel in the water part. Is how Tosfos learns it. Okay, but in any case, so by the same token, over here you can say that the air or the posel schach helps towards the seven tefachim of the sukkah, but still it does not help in order to be able to sleep underneath it. Just like over there, you wouldn't be able to tovel in the muddy part of the mikvah. Okay. Mishnah says. Somebody wants to ask them. Okay. Mishnah says, Ha'oisa sukkose k'min tzrif. If a person makes his sukkah like a tzrif, and a tzrif is a kind of hut that they would use when they're hunting animals, or actually says when they're hunting to trap birds. So they made kind of a makeshift hut that would, it was shaped sort of like an oversized yam. Rashi describes that it's shaped like a beehive, which is kind of like an oversized yarmulke. So you have, it doesn't really have a separate roof and walls. The walls curve up and become the roof. The Rambam explains it somewhat differently. It looks like a tent. It has two diagonal walls that meet at a point at the top. Whatever, it's the same thing really, the halacha, either way. So you have, suppose you built your sukkah like that. So it doesn't have separate walls and a roof. The walls and the roof are all the same thing. Or if he leaned it against the wall, so he made it like a lean-to, he took the schach and put one end of the sticks and poles and whatever of the schach on the ground, and the other end leaning against the wall, so you have sort of a triangular-shaped sukkah underneath that. So Rabbi Eliezer says that it's possible because it doesn't have a roof. Because in other words, you have to have a distinctive roof. You have to have. We learned earlier in the perek, for example, about canopy beds in the sukkah. We talked about over there where it has a horizontal roof versus where it doesn't, whether it's considered an oil or not. So by the same token, Rabbi Eliezer says that it needs to have a horizontal roof, otherwise it can't be a sukkah. But Chum Machshir and the Chum say it's kosher without having a horizontal roof. So the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a brisa, moide Rabbi Eliezer, she mikbiyam in a karka tefach. Rabbi Eliezer will agree that it's kosher if you lifted it up a tefach from the ground. In other words, if what you did is, when you're building it as a lean-to, so instead of actually starting from the bottom of the ground, if you first put a tefach down of something to serve as a wall, and then you built your lean-to on top of that, so then that's fine. Then at least you have a wall. Then at least you have a semblance of a wall of a tefach. Oy shehfligam in a koisel tefach. Or by the same token, at the top end of the lean-to, if instead of having the pieces of schach leaning directly against the wall, if he put something there sticking out of the wall, a ledge or something, and then he has the ends of the schach leaning on that. So then, shehik sheira, then it's going to be kosher, because then you're able to tell that there is a wall, there is a wall and there is a roof. And therefore even Rabbi Eliezer is going to say that it's fine. The Aruch HaNer actually points out another possibility. When you have, suppose you have a sukkah built like the Rambam's definition of a tzrich, where it has two diagonal walls that meet at a point at the top. Again, we're saying Rabbi Eliezer would say it's no good. You could also have, let's say, where they don't meet together at the top. You could have where there's a gap between them. But then you're going to have to, it's not going to be good enough if you have a gap there. You're going to, even though the gap is less than 3 tefachim, you're still going to have something over there because you need a roof. So therefore, you're going to have to fill that up with kosher schach. In the cases that we're describing over here with the lean-to, you wouldn't even need that. You could even have that what you put on the ground over there to serve as the one tefach of wall, or what you put on the side of the wall over there, on the side of the wall of the house, to serve as the one tefach of the roof of the sukkah, could even be possible schach. So the Gemara says, "My time out did Rabbanon." Now, why do the Chachamim say that it's fine? The reason is because they hold shipui oilim ka oilim damu. They hold that the diagonal surface of the side of a tent is considered an oil. So therefore, it's fine. So you have over here. It's true. It's true. There's no separate roof and there's no separate walls. Nevertheless, they say that fine. That diagonal thing going up on the sides or on one side is still considered the round thing, like Rashi describes, can still be considered an oihel, and therefore you're fine. So the Gemara tells, Abaya ashkechei l'Rabbi Yosef tikov goni v'kilas chasanim v'sukkah. Abaya one time found Rabbi Yosef was sleeping inside the sukkah in a kilas chasanim. Now we learned previously, and on Yud Aleph or so, that a kilas chasanim is a canopy bed where you have one pole, you have a framework, unlike now we said over there, you have a kinoif or naklite hamita, where the poles are permanently attached to the bed, and you have a kinoif had four poles and naklite had two poles. Then you have a kilas chasanim is a separate frame that goes around the bed, and then you spread a sheet. And then you spread a sheet or a net or whatever over it, a sheet we're talking about. So what happened was Rabbi Yosef had like that. He had his bed in the sukkah. He had over it was a frame with over it was a frame with two poles and a horizontal beam going across. And there was a sheet spread over it so that it formed a tent-like structure within the sukkah. And Rabbi Yosef was sleeping underneath it. So Abaya asked Rabbi Yosef, which opinion in the Mishnah are you following? Rabbi Eliezer. Evidently, you're following Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says that such a thing for a sukkah would be possible because he doesn't consider it an oil. Therefore, by the same token, it follows that according to Rabbi Eliezer, having such a thing inside your sukkah is not an oil within your sukkah such that it should be possible. The problem with that is, Shavkas Rabbanan va'abdes Rabbi Eliezer. Are you ignoring what the Chachamim say and following Rabbi Eliezer? Yochid v'Rab Malacha Kerabim. So how could you be following Rabbi Eliezer? How could you be following Rabbi Eliezer when the Chachamim say that such a thing is not when the Chachamim say such a thing is considered an oil? So therefore, now when you have your bed inside the sukkah, it comes out that you're sleeping underneath an oil inside the sukkah, and therefore it's no good. So how can you do that? So, Rabbi Yosef answers, Braisa Ibchaton, because a Braisa says the opinions the other way around. Rabbi Yezer Machshir V'Chom Poslin. That it's the other way around. Rabbi Yezer says such a sukkah would be kosher. The Chachamim say it's possible. Yochid V'Rab Malacha K'Rabim. Therefore, it means the Chachamim are holding that a diagonal wall is not considered a wall, is not considered an oil, rather. Therefore, no problem. My diagonal walls of my sheet over my bed are not considered an oil to make it a problem that I'm sleeping underneath it in a sukkah. So Rabbi asks him, Shabkas Masnissim Ba'abdes Kibraisa? Okay, but how can you ignore the Mishnah in favor of a Braisa? Whenever you have, in general, when we have something that it says in a Mishnah, and versus something that it says in a Braisa, then you usually follow the Mishnah. You usually say the Braisa may have a mistake in it or something like that. Well, how can you be following a Braisa against the Mishnah? So he answers him, Amalei Masnissim Yechidah. So he answers, our Mishnah is actually only a das yachid. The Tanya, we learn a braisa. Ha'osis a kosi kaminsu. If a person makes a sukkah like a hut, oishas smacha lakosol, or if he makes the ends of it leaning against the wall like a lean-to, Reb Nosson omer that Reb Eliezer posel and pesha in lagag. Reb Nosson says, Reb Eliezer says it's posel because it has no roof, v'cham machshir, and the cham say it's kosher. But the other chachamim in Reb Nosson's time disagreed. And they held that it's the other way around, that Rabbi Eliezer says it's kosher, and the Chachamim say it's possible. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef says, I'm entitled to follow, since the Braisa is clarifying for us that the Mishnah is only a Das Yachid, then therefore, instead, we can follow the opinion of the Chachamim that is implied in that Braisa. Okay. Next, continues the Mishnah. Machtzelas Kanim Gdola. If you have a large mat made out of reeds. Now, reeds, of course, in and of themselves are kosher schach. But if you have a mat that's made out of such reeds, so we have to consider all you're allowed to use it for schach. Now, we learned previously in the perek that you can only use for schach something that's not makabel tuma. Mats are often used, they're often made and used for sleeping on or standing on or lying on or whatever. So the Mishnah says, machtzelas kanim gdola, machtzelas gdola. A large mat made out of reeds. So when it's large, since it's hard, Rashi says, it's not very comfortable for sleeping on. So therefore, I saw the shiva. If nevertheless, a person made it in order to lie on it, mekabelas tuma, then it is mekabel tuma, because we learned previously in the perek, that, and when we learn in various places throughout Shas, that a keli is able to be mekabel tuma just for machshava. You have in mind to use it for a certain purpose, that's reason enough for it to be mekabel tuma. So over here, he had the machshava to sleep on it, therefore that's enough for it to be considered that it's mekabel tuma. So I saw the shchiva. So if he made it having in mind to sleep on it, mekabelas tuma, that's mekabel tuma. The ein mesachin ba. Therefore, you're not allowed to use it for schach. So even though it hasn't actually been laid on yet, but the fact that it's made to be laid on is reason enough for it to be mekabel tuma. And in fact, actually, we learned previously that we learned previously, for example, that if you have a piece of clothing, which then a small piece ripped off it, where that piece is not makabel tuma anymore, nevertheless, because it belonged to a larger piece of cloth that was makabel tuma, therefore you can't use it anymore. By the same token, over here, even if this mat, let's say you cut a piece out of it or whatever, you still wouldn't be able to use it for schach. L'sikuch, on the other hand, if it was made for schach, mesachin bava enim makabelas tuma, then you're allowed to use it for. Then you're allowed to use it for schach, and it's not makabel tuma. Now, the Gemara is going to ask, so what about if you just made it stam? The Mishnah is talking about if you made it for lying on, or if you made it for schach, but it didn't specify what happens if you just made it without any particular intention in mind. So that we're going to see in the Gemara. What we do with that. Rabbi Eliezer says, "Achas ktana v'achas gdola." Rabbi Eliezer says, "Doesn't matter the size, whether it's a small one or a big one." I saw the shchiva. If he made it to lie on, mekabelas tuma ve'in mesachin ba, then it's mekabel tuma and you can't use it for schach. L'sikuch, and if he made it for schach, mesachin ba ve'in mekabelas tuma. So it doesn't matter the size; it just matters what you had in mind. The Gemara is going to explain what exactly is the point that Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim are arguing about. Okay, So the Gemara asks on the Mishnah, Hagufa Kasha, you seem to have a contradiction within the Mishnah itself. Amrit asal the shechivah makabel es tumah vein mesachim. We said in the first case, we have a large mat. If you made it to sleep on, then it's makabel tumah and you can't use it for schach. Implying time of da asal the shechivah. So the reason why it's possible is because you made it specifically for lying on. The implication is that if you just made it without any particular intention in mind, and it's a large one, then it would be kosher. But then the Mishnah continues. That if you made it for schach, then you can use it for schach, and it's not makabel tumah, implying time adasol the sikuch, implying only because you made it for schach. Implying that if you made it without any particular intention in mind, then we assume it's meant to be laid on, and therefore it's makabel tumah. So what is it? What's the din if you make a mat without anything particular in mind? So the Gemara answers, holei kasha kan b'gdoila kan b'ktana. It depends whether we're talking about a large one or a small one. The Mishnah, when it started machzelas kanim gdoila. So a large one, the default assumption is that it's going to be used for schach, because it's too large for a person to be able to sleep on, and it's anyway kind of hard. So therefore, mela, if it's the size of a person, then a person is going to sleep on it. But if, especially a poor person, as we find in various places in Shas, but if it's larger than a person's size anyway, then a person is usually not going to sleep on it. So therefore, we assume by default that he made it for the purpose of schach, and therefore it's kosher. Actually, there's a shita of Rosh that says you go according to Minhag HaMakom. There's an opinion of Rishonim. There's an opinion of the Rosh that says you go according to Minhag HaMakom. But let's say you have a place where there's no clear minhag about it one way or the other. Anyway, so if you made it, so a large one, the default assumption is you made it for schach. Kan b'ktana, as opposed to when the Mishnah says if you made it for schach, that's implicitly talking about a small one. A small one usually is meant for lying on. So therefore, only if you made it specifically for schach is it going to be good. Otherwise, the default assumption is you made it for lying on, and then it's makabel tumah. So the Gemara says, "Bishleim l'rabbanon l'kasha." Okay, well then, according to the Chachamim, then there's no problem. We understand what the Chachamim are saying. The difference is twofold. The difference is a big one versus a small one, and then within that, the difference is what you had in mind. With a big one, in other words, there's two sizes, big and small, and there's three possible kavonas that you could have in mind. You could have in mind it's for schach, you could have in mind it's for lying on, and you can have no particular kavona at all. So what we're saying is, so far, that according to the Chachamim, we're saying if it's a large one, then if you made it for schach, or if you made it stam, then it's kosher, only if you made it specifically for lying on as a puzzle, and a small one is the other way around. If you make it stam, or if you make it for lying on, then it's puzzle, and if you make it specifically for schach, then it's kosher. So according to the Chachamim, we understand. But Rabbi Eliezer says at the end of the Mishnah that the big and small ones are the same. He says, achas gdoila v'achas ktana. So, Kasha, so according to him, how does the Mishnah fit? The Tanan, as we see, continue in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Achas Ktana v'Achas Gdola, he says, whether a big one or a small one, if you made it for lying on, Mekabelas Tumah v'en Mesachin, whether it's Mekabel Tumah and you can't use it for Schach, implying, Taimer da'asol l'shchiva, so only because you made it for lying on as a puzzle, Hastamol l'sikuch, implying by default, if you didn't have any kavana in mind, we would assume it's for schach and therefore it's kosher. Ema sefer, but look at the next part of the Mishnah. I saw the sikuch mesachin ba ve'enim kabel stoma. Rabbi Eliezer continues that if you made it for schach, then you can use it for schach and it's not makabel tuma, implying time of da'asol the sikuch. Only because you made it for schach, but by default, we would assume it's for lying on. So we have to understand then, what is Rabbi Eliezer saying? The Chachamim, at least, we can infer that they started by saying Gdoila, but then they didn't go on to mention Ktana, so we can understand that they're talking about first Gdoila and then Ktana. But Rabbi Eliezer, who says both Gdoila and Ktana have the same din, So what is it over here? So what is it, according to him, if you did it stam without any kavana in mind? Now, Ela Omar Rava, so Rava says, you're right. Because of that, we have to understand the Mishnah differently. Bigdola kula amale pligi de stamala sikha. When it's a large mat, everybody agrees that minastam you make it for schach, because again, it's larger than a person can lie on anyway. It's anyway kind of hard. So therefore, a person is not going to make it usually in order to lie on. So a person makes it stam, then they're allowed to use it for schach. It's not makabel trova. Ki pligi biktana. The machlokas is specifically about a small one. Tanakama sover stam ktana l'shtiva. The Tanakama holds that by default we assume that a small one is meant for lying on. Rabbi Eliezer sover stam ktana nami l'sikul. Rabbi Eliezer says even a small one by default we assume is meant for schach. Only if you said that you're making it in order to lie on, only then would it be a problem. Rahochi karma. So what? When Rabbi Eliezer says achas gdolav achas ktana, what he means is he's saying like this: machzela sakanim gdola, a large mat of reeds. So let's reread the whole Mishnah from the beginning. Machzela sakanim gdola. If you have a large mat made out of reeds, asal l'shchiva mekabelas tumah vein mesachinba. If you make it for lying on, then it's mekabel tumah and you can't use it for sach. And we understand from that time of dasal the shtiva, the reason it's possible is because you made it to lie on. Ha stama nasik mi shasal the sikul chumasakimba. If you make it stam, we consider as if it was made for schach, and therefore you can use it for schach. Because again, being that it's a large one, usually people are not going to lie on it. So unless you specifically said or had in mind when you made it that you're going to use it for lying on, then it's fine to use. And the Mishnah would continue. Now we're explaining, we're going through the Mishnah and explaining what the Mishnah is implying. The Mishnah continues, would continue. Ketana, on the other hand, a small one. Now in the Tanakama's words, it didn't specify anything about the small one. We're filling that in ourselves of what the Tanakama is implying. That a small one, asal sikuch mesakimba, if you made it pesach, then good, you can use it pesach. Taimed asal sikuch, but only because you made it for pesach. Ha-stoma, but if you made it stam without specifying, nasa kamisha saw the shchiva vein mesachinba, then it's as if you made it for lying on, therefore you cannot use it for schach. The Mishnah had not used the word katana in the words of the Tanakama, but we're filling that in ourselves, that when we're saying the shchiva is referring to a large one, not only when you make it l'shchiva as a puzzle, and the word l'sikuch is referring to a small one, only when you make it p'schach are you allowed to use it. So far, that's the explanation. That's basically the same way as we understood it originally. So the Tanakama only mentions a large one because only by a large one do we say that the default is p'schach. But also Rabbi Eliezer Lameimah. Now Rabbi Eliezer comes and disagrees, and he says, "Achas ktana ba'achas gdola, whether it's a small one or whether it's a large one, stoma ksheira l'sikul. If you made it without anything in mind, then you're allowed to use it for schach." So in other words, Rashi explains that when Rabbi Eliezer would use the expression l'sikuch mesatkin ba, he doesn't mean that it dafka has to be made specifically for schach. It means that it was made stam without anything in mind, and therefore by default we consider it to be for schach. So as you say, not like you Tanakama, that that only applies to a large one. I would hold that that applies to a small one as well. If you made it stam, then it's kosher for schach. The problem with that is Tosfos says in that case it comes out that Rabbi Eliezer is arguing only with a diuk of what the Tanakama said. The Mishnah should have specified in so many words that the Tanakama makes a difference between a big one and a small one, and then Rabbi Eliezer would be arguing about it. So Tosfos says, in other words, that the explanation of the Tanakama is like we said before that he's talking about a gdola, and then he's talking about a ktana. But then you have what happens with stam. Rabbi is saying that Rabbi Eliezer is arguing that with both of them, if you made it for lying on, then you can't use it for schach. But if you made it for stam, then it would be fine. Which is similar to what we said. According to Rashi, in other words, Rava is also fixing up what the Tanakhama had said, that originally we didn't know what the Tanakhama said about a small one, and now we're fixing that up and we're saying that the Tanakhama is also implying about a small one that by default it's not meant for Sakh. And Rabbi Eliezer is disagreeing. Okay, so we'll continue this tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.